Welcome to Mastering Logical Fallacies, the online course. This is the audio version of the online course presented at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. For the complete learning experience, including multimedia presentations, quizzes, assignments, peer-to-peer discussion, instructor interaction, and more, enroll as a student at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. My name is Beau Bennett, and I am your instructor for this course. So what's the difference between reason and rationality? Well, first let's talk about reason. And when somebody says you need to use reason or behave reasonably, what we're talking about is basically finding reasons for your belief and justified reasons. Of course, there's a lot of subjectivity here because what might be reasonable to one person is not reasonable to another person. So reason does contain an element of subjectivity. Rationality, on the other hand, is basically the application of reason, or, depending on the context in which it's used, it could also be defined as being consistent with your beliefs and values. And that's where we find it the most. So if somebody is behaving rationally, that means they're behaving within the context of their beliefs. And to give you an example, let's say I believe in the Easter Bunny, which I don't, by the way, but let's say I do. And I also believe that in order for the Easter Bunny to come, I and everybody else in my family needs to be in bed by midnight, because if the Easter Bunny sees me, then he's not going to deliver his chocolate goodies. And if I get everybody in bed, because I have this belief, I'm acting rationally. I'm acting consistent with my beliefs. Although one can easily argue that I'm not acting within reason. I'm acting unreasonably. But if somebody were to argue that I'm acting irrationally, then I could definitely come back and say, no, I'm acting consistent with my beliefs and values. So that's the general difference. Rationality tends to be more in line with your beliefs and values. It has to do with consistency in the way you're acting. A more common use of irrationality, or rationality for that matter, is the reverse of that, which I just said, irrationality. When you're behaving irrational, you're doing something that if you really took the time to think about and you weren't acting emotionally, you would realize that you're not acting consistently with your own beliefs. For example, you're excited to see all this great food and chocolate and everything, and you're just excited for the opportunity, so you just keep on eating and eating and eating and eating, and you know you're going to get sick. You know you don't want to eat at all because you're going to get fat, but you do anyway because you're really caught up in the emotion of having all this food and you're not really thinking about it, so you're acting irrationally. That's one example. So once again, reason has to do with a way of, it's basically an epistemology, the way of knowing the world, the way of knowing things around you, and that we use reason for that. We find reason and evidence to form our beliefs and to make judgments, whereas rationality has to do with consistency. It has to do with acting consistent with those beliefs and judgments. What is an argument? If you ask the general person off the street, they'll give you the first definition that you usually find in the dictionary, which would be an exchange of diverging or opposing views, typically a heated or angry one. And we're all very familiar with an argument. We've been in arguments before, and they're very unpleasant for most people. So unfortunately, arguments are also extremely important when used in the other context, and we tend to associate this negative feelings of and this word argument, all these negative connotations, we put on the very positive form of an argument, which is a reason or set of reasons given with the aim of persuading others that an action or idea is right or wrong. That's the definition, the dictionary definition of argument, the second one down, not the most commonly used one. So what we're looking at, let's break that down a little bit, a reason or set of reasons. And this is where reason comes in, of course, because we're talking about reasons. We're giving reasons why we believe something. And we're not just saying because. We're not saying because I feel it or something along those lines. We're giving reasons. And the better the reasons, the better the argument. Given with the aim of persuading. So in general terms, we are talking about persuading somebody with an argument. We want them to believe that our argument is correct, that it's right. And I know there are so many people who say, you know what, it's not about me proving I'm right or anything. I have my beliefs, you have yours. Yeah, I think that's just more of a politically correct way of kind of getting out of trying to say, look, I'm right and you're wrong. And let's face it, there are many issues that you can't have more than one person be right if you're holding opposing views. I mean, it's either one way or the other. It's not something that both people could be right. And an example is religion. Not all religions could be right. They're mutually exclusive. So you have one person who says Jesus is God, and you have another person who says Allah is God. And if you believe in Jesus, you're going to go to hell. And of course, the other person will say, well, if you believe in Allah and not Jesus, then you're going to hell. Both cannot be right. They're mutually exclusive. So when you're making an argument, you're giving reasons with the aim of persuading other people that an action or idea is right or wrong. And of course, when we're talking about being right or wrong, it's more of a judgment call. It is connecting to our values. Or there could be right and wrong if we're talking about something objective, like a mathematical fact, a scientific fact. I mean, there are things that are right or wrong, and I think the better terminology for that may be correct or incorrect. So it's generally easier to persuade somebody when we're talking about correct facts. You don't need a full argument with a lot of reasons. A lot of times you could just state the facts and maybe the reasons for the fact. I think the bottom line to know about an argument is that there is no one simple formula for an argument. Arguments are everywhere. They can be found everywhere. And it's important to be able to spot an argument, break it apart, and be able to dissect it, look at the different parts, and see how strong the reasons are behind it. See what the actual aim is of the argument. Is somebody trying to persuade you? What are they trying to persuade you of? And maybe even go deeper into that. Why? Why is this person trying to persuade you? What's in it for them? You know, think about all those different things, and then that will help you many times to detect different fallacies that we'll be getting into later in this course. How are beliefs formed? Well, that is a big question. It's such a big question. In fact, there are many books dedicated to it. There are many courses in universities that focus on that issue, how beliefs are actually formed. So it's not important to cover the majority of that. In fact, we couldn't even begin to do this question justice in the short time that we have. But what is important to know, that beliefs just don't come out of nowhere. Beliefs don't automatically just pop into your head and you believe in something. People believe in things for reasons. And some of those reasons are things in which they have very little control, if you want to call it that. For example, if you are born into a certain culture that has very strong cultural beliefs, and you were raised in this culture, this becomes part of your identity, who you are, a part of your daily life. Everything about yourself revolves around this cultural belief. It is much more difficult to shake that belief than it is if somebody just told you something one day and you said, yeah, I guess I believe that. And then you found out maybe a year later or so that you found out an opposing fact that was more probable, so you changed that belief. As you can see, there are different types of belief, and some beliefs are very tightly woven with emotion, and they're strengthened by emotion. So it is more difficult for somebody with a strong emotion attached to a belief, and these emotions a lot of times are a result of this something like a strong cultural upbringing that we talked about. if somebody does have this strong emotional connection, it is much more difficult to change that belief, even if a lot of evidence comes against that belief. It's easy for a person to use one of many cognitive tricks and trick themselves into not being convinced by a good argument or evidence. We see that a lot in any kind of debate or trying to change somebody's mind, change somebody's opinion. It's not an easy thing to do. Beliefs are formed in just so many different ways that has to do with everything around us, our environment, and our biology. There certainly are some people who are more susceptible to certain kinds of beliefs than others. It is that there are many studies that show that depending on how we are made physically, what our brains look like, some of us are more susceptible to the kinds of belief that require a little bit more creativity, such as religious beliefs, something that has a lot of imagination. Some of us have those parts and those areas in our brain that make it a lot easier to accept than somebody else who's a lot more analytical in their thinking. And yes, some of this is a result of our environment, how we're brought up, how we're taught, and that also means that we can change our beliefs. But it's important to know when it comes to belief that not everybody is on the same playing field. And a good example might be if you take 10 random people in the population that all happen to believe Elvis is still alive. You take these 10 people, and it is unfair to subject them all to the same arguments that Elvis is not alive, and the same proofs and the same evidence, and have them all come to the same conclusion at the same time that, yeah, I guess Elvis isn't alive. And the reason this is unfair is because everybody's belief, all 10 of those people's beliefs, are different. They were formed differently based on who they are as a person genetically. They might be more deeper ingrained. Some of them may have a much stronger belief from the onset than other people. Some of them may have extremely emotional experiences. Maybe somebody experienced being with Elvis in some kind of vision or dream or something, and that is incredibly hard to shake. So there are many different reasons why people form beliefs and how beliefs are actually formed. But once again, the important thing to remember is that not everybody is on the same playing field. And just because somebody holds a strong belief, it's unfair to make judgments about them and about their beliefs without exactly realizing and knowing everything that went in to form that belief and how strong that belief is being held. So when you're trying to argue with somebody, keep that in mind, that you may be doing a great job. You may be throwing out all the best arguments out there, pointing out a lot of logical fallacies, but yet that person is still holding so strongly to a belief, and years later that person may still have that belief, and that's not going to change. It doesn't necessarily constitute a failure on your part. It just means that perhaps that person just had a really strong belief to begin with. So what is a fallacy? Well, in short, a fallacy is an error in reasoning. And let's look at that phrase for a moment. If we take the word error, we could see that there's some subjectivity in there. What exactly is an error? Well, if we're talking about mathematical formulas or something more objective, then yes, an error is an error, and not an error is not an error. But generally with a lot of the arguments and the things that we're talking about, an error, there's a lot of subjectivity in there. So just keep that in mind. And same thing with reasoning. What is reasoning to one person might be total nonsense to another person, or poor reasoning to another person. Reasoning, of course, it definitely falls on a spectrum, and there's good reasoning and there's bad reasoning. So what exactly constitutes a fallacy? There is a lot of subjectivity to that whole idea of a fallacy to begin with, so I think that's important. But when we're talking about what we're going to be talking about in this course, of when it comes to fallacies, we're going to be talking about essentially two different kinds of fallacies. We're talking about the deductive logical fallacies, or the formal logical fallacies. Formal fallacies are based on formal arguments. So if we say, take the classic, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. There you have a classic structure of a deductive argument, a formal deductive argument. If we break that formula and we say, we go from the formula all A's are B, C is an A, therefore C is a B. If we break from that formula and we say all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, but Socrates doesn't have to be immortal, well, then we committed a logical fallacy. We committed a formal deductive logical fallacy. However, that is pretty rare in the world of logical fallacies. It's pretty rare in debate and casual conversation and casual discussion and politics and religion and all the interesting topics that people talk about these days. What is very common is this whole idea of inductive logical fallacies or informal fallacies. And if you look at most of the fallacies that you'll be finding within this course, in my book or on the internet, you take any one, let's say ad hominem attack, then we're talking about an informal logical fallacy. There's no rules of logic that have been broken for this person to commit this fallacy. A fallacy in itself is an argument. And I want to repeat that again. A fallacy in itself is an argument. And I should specify by saying an informal fallacy is an argument. Because when we call a fallacy on somebody, we have to make an argument to substantiate that claim, that yes, you made it a fallacy. If I am arguing with somebody, let's say I'm arguing with a politician over if schools should include school supplies with each student at the beginning of the year. And I tell that politician that he's a moron and he never did well in school, therefore he doesn't care if kids have school supplies or not. And somebody calls me on committing the ad hominem attack and saying, you are wrong about that because you called him a moron and that has nothing to do with the argument itself. And of course, now we could say, okay, well, let's look at this. I said that this person is a moron and he never did well in school, so he doesn't care about school supplies. Now, I can argue that my claim that this person is a moron, meaning that he didn't do well in school and therefore he doesn't care, that itself is an argument, and that I can argue that my calling him a moron does have some significance in validity when it comes to the argument itself. It is evidence that my argument is correct. Whereas another person could argue and say, no, it has nothing to do with it. Whether he's a moron or not, it doesn't change the facts that this school should have school supplies or not. So I guess I'm simplifying the hypothetical argument here, but the point is that when we're talking about informal arguments and we're talking about informal fallacies on those arguments, that in itself is an argument. So what is a fallacy to one person isn't necessarily a fallacy to another person. If you call somebody out on a fallacy, you need to be able to back that up with a strong argument itself as to why it's a fallacy. And that person, if somebody calls you out on an argument, you need to be able to defend yourself and say, well, first of all, I would say that if it definitely was a fallacy and it came from emotion rather than reason, you might just want to concede that, yes, it was a fallacy. I take it back. I withdraw my statement, or whatever they use in courts. However, if it was, if you do believe that it was a good argument and it wasn't a fallacy, well, you need to back that up, and you need to back that up with an argument. So just because somebody calls you out on a fallacy does not mean that you committed a fallacy. And just because you call somebody out on a fallacy does not mean that that person committed a fallacy. There's also the intent. The intent can definitely work in here as well, what the person's intent was in the argument. And we'll see some of that later on within this course as well. So what's a fallacy to one person isn't necessarily a fallacy to another person. There is subjectivity here. There is judgment. And that's what you need to recognize. So what are the pros and cons of being a smartass? Well, first let's point out that the word smartass is really a vernacular expression that's used pejoratively to make somebody look inferior or stupid sometimes, or just mean. Sometimes it could be, I've heard it said before, somebody called you a smartass, kind of like with a smile. It is kind of a compliment in that case when they're saying, smartass. Like, yeah, you got a good point. I don't have a good comeback, so I'm going to call you a smartass anyway. So how does this whole thing of being a smartass fit into logical fallacies? Well, once you become well-schooled in logical fallacies, you're going to be able to look at somebody's argument, if it's in writing, or hear somebody's argument, and break it apart in real time in your mind, and be able to point out the flaws in the argument, why it's wrong, and you're also going to be able to match it with a certain fallacy. And you could have the name of the fallacy and maybe even the Latin name of the fallacy. Now, this is all happening in real time in your mind. Now, what do you do with this information? And that's the important part of this conversation. Do you call somebody out on their fallacious reasoning every time they make a fallacious comment? Do you hold it in and don't say anything? Or do you not only call them out, but make them look like an idiot for saying such a stupid thing? Well, there's no clear answer to this. It's a value call. But I could certainly give you my advice. If you've ever read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, an excellent book written, I believe, back in 1930, but still just as valid today as it was back then. He recommends you think about the conversation and think about how your comments make the other person feel. Are you embarrassing the other person by saying this? Are you making them look unnecessarily stupid? What benefit do you get from pointing these fallacies out? Now, if you're just talking with friends at a social gathering, I would certainly recommend not getting defensive and not pointing out fallacious reasoning, and just basically not being a troublemaker that nobody likes. However, if you are talking about serious issues, whether they're political, religious, you're debating in your community, if these are serious issues and somebody is committing a fallacy, then you might really want to point it out to them, and there are different ways you could do it. You can be a smartass about it and just call them out on the fallacy, throw out the Latin name, and just make them look like an idiot, basically. Or you can be a lot more diplomatic about how you call somebody out on the fallacy. And you might say something like, well, I know how that sounds like it might make sense, but have you thought of this? And then kind of correct them in a more diplomatic way. So again, this is just things to think about based on your style, what kind of image you're going for as a person and as a debater and as somebody who a critical thinker, an analytical thinker, an arguer, whatever your label is or whatever you want to call yourself, you have to think about how you're going to respond to people. And I know that I made some wrong turns, or I've tried a few different styles out that I did not like very much when I was heavy into debating back a few years ago on a text-based discussion board. And I look back at that and I said, boy, I would never do that today. But I've changed over time, and I think that you will too. I think we all do, based on just trying out different techniques and finding our own style, finding out where we are. So do you want to be a smartass? Well, it depends how you define a smartass, and it depends on the context and the situation. Maybe sometimes the best response, the most effective response, would be a smartass response, and other times it won't. I'll leave that decision up to you. So when it comes to fallacies, who's actually guilty of committing a fallacy? Where does the irrationality lie? Is it in the argument itself? Is it in the person who's actually making the argument? Is it in the interpretation of the argument by the people who are listening to it or reading it or interpreting it? Well, the answer is complex, and it all depends on the argument and the situation. But to give you a few different examples, we could see where the fallacy actually lies. The first and most common is probably the argument itself being fallacious. And there are many examples of this. If we're talking, for example, for the naturalistic fallacy, or the natural fallacy, sometimes it's called. If somebody says, or if you read somewhere, that XYZ product is 100% natural, so it's gotta be good for you. Well, that is fallacious, because there are many things, obviously, that are 100% natural, like viruses, that are not good for you. So that is an example of a fallacious argument itself, because it is an argument, it's making a claim, but it is fallacious. So there's no interpretation that is needed. The argument itself is fallacious. Now, let's move over to the anecdotal fallacy, or a lot of times it's just referred to as an anecdote, and or sometimes trying to pass an anecdote off as evidence. If somebody tells you a story, and they just want to maybe make a point, then they move on to give you an anecdote. Now, if you, the one listening to this, takes that anecdote and interprets it as strong evidence for the point that they're making or for the argument, then you are guilty of fallacious reasoning. You are the one that's interpreting what is nothing more than an anecdote and making it something much more than it is, and that's strong evidence for what they are saying. And this is also a case where the person actually making the or saying the anecdote, giving the anecdote out, could be fallacious as well, or could be guilty of fallacious reasoning if they believe and they're trying to pass off that anecdote as strong evidence. So here's where both parties could be guilty, depending on the interpretation and the intention of the person actually making the argument. But the argument itself, or the anecdote itself, is not fallacious. It's just an anecdote. Another example is the argument by fast talking. There are many people who naturally speak very quickly, and that's just the way they speak. There's no fallacious intent made on the part of the person speaking quickly. But if people listening to this person interpret their fast talking as being extremely confident to the level where whatever they're saying has got to be true, because nobody has that kind of confidence unless it's true, then of course you're guilty of fallacious reasoning as the person who's listening to it. Now, if somebody knows that fast talking increases the acceptance of the message, and they're deliberately speaking quickly in order to get people to use less cognitive functions and accept the message based more on automatic processing, then they're guilty of not really being fallacious, but more of deception or deliberate manipulation. So as you can see, there are a lot of different situations, and there's a lot of different blame to go around depending on the different circumstances. So just keep that in mind as you listen to all these different fallacies. Try to think about where the fallacious reasoning is, where is there malicious intent, if there is any, and how are you, the person who is going to be reading these fallacies or exposed to these fallacies, how are you going to react to them, knowing what you know now?